welcome to the debut episode of SNY.TV's Meet the Mets cast. I am Steve Hofstetter, joined here by Rob Brender and Matt Cerrone. And this is the opening day of the podcast. And so we're going to be talking about opening day. Before we get to that, quick programming note, this show will be available as part of the SNY.TV Mets podcast feed. So search for SNY Mets in the iPhone podcast app or whatever fine app you use to listen to your podcasts. And definitely subscribe to the feed if you haven't already. You should rate us, drop us a review, all that. So we're going to be talking about opening day. And one of the things I want to point out before we get started is the Mets are actually a pretty great opening day team. I looked this up, 34-21 opening day record, and that includes losing the first six. So that's pretty amazing. They've been 34-15 since. From 1971 to 1983, they only lost one opening day. So Rob, Matt, let's get going by sharing our favorite opening day stories.
Matt, I have bunting on my couch. I don't know if there's a better story than that. Just for the podcast, since Steve said it's opening day, you had to break out the bunting.
I thought that was your opening day story.
So, no, that's not it. I think at
bunting,
one point
it's swing away.
It is. Steve mentioned that they had the best. I don't think you mentioned they had the best record. At one point, I think it was the best winning percentage. It may still be of any team in the major leagues on opening day. So my best memories of the Mets on opening day are just that they win frequently.
Yeah, mine is I'm fortunate to have been able to be on the field in 2009 when they opened Citi Field. And my dad came along, which I'm incredibly thankful for, to have had that opportunity. But we were down on the field before the game started. And my dad's a gadget guru. He loved, he always carried... We used to call it a utility belt, basically, full of all kinds of different stuff. We always had with him. He was a Boy Scout, and that was important to him. And behind us, trying to get onto the field through the cage on the left side or by the home dugout, was Fred Wilpon and Saul Katz. I mean, it's their building, and they can't get onto the field because there was a zip tie locking the cage. So my dad very casually just walks over. I know Fred, say hello. My dad pulls out a pocket knife from his pocket and starts sawing through the zip tie, to which Wilpon says, "Oh, no, that's great. Please do it." So he opens it up. He opens the gate. On the field steps Wilpon and Saul, have a nice little chit-chat. And I just found it incredibly interesting and fun that basically my dad, was allowed to damage Citi Field property and break the owners of the ballpark into the into the field.
That's pretty cool.
That's amazing, especially because that's probably why the rest of us have to get checked every single time we walk into Citi Field now.
Sorry.
Your dad was busy bringing in blades.
You may be right, actually. Who knows?
Every time I have to put my phone and wallet in that damn bin, I'm going to be thinking about that.
Yeah, I know. Please.
All right, my favorite opening day, 1998. So mine is an on-field story. 1990, I mean, I wasn't on field. I mean, of the players on the field. Just watching the game. 98 opening day. I got to go there in person. It's vintage Curt Schilling starting for the Phillies. And there was a 14-inning, 1-0 win against the Phils. Alberto Castillo drove in Brian McRae. That's the most 1998 sentence I've ever said. And I had class the next day. And I had skipped class to go to opening day, as is tradition in my family. It's the only time we're ever allowed to cut school. And so I was in college at the time. I was a freshman in college. And I went to class the next day. And one of my teachers, I guess, was a big baseball fan. We didn't know that about him. And he said how many people who were absent were absent because of opening day. And me and my buddy raised our hands because, who cares? We're like, we're in college now. We can do what we want. And the rest of the class was looking at us like, you're idiots. Why are you admitting to this? You skipped school. And apparently your teacher was a huge fan. He just goes, I'm so jealous. What a great game. And just starts asking us about the game in front of the rest of the class. It was incredible.
That's terrific. That's great.
That's fantastic. For me, a couple things stand out. Opening day used to be about the Cincinnati Reds more than it was about the Mets or any other team for that matter, because they would open up the first game every day in Cincinnati and they'd have a parade beforehand. And although I wasn't there for the parade, just watching the Reds and you knew baseball season had started when you saw them on the field. I as a kid, that was a cool tradition. And obviously that's now gone away and ESPN has taken over and they'll play a Sunday night game, or at least they did the last couple of years, where it was a one-team deal and it was Sunday night, which I used to think was garbage. It was awful. Baseball should open up during the day, no matter where it is. Now, at least they're going with, I think in 2017, there's going to be, what, three or four games or something like that, maybe five or six on opening day. As far as the Mets go, the one opening day that really stands out to me is less about one that I was at in person, but more about in 1987, watching them get their rings. And I was very young at the time, still 9 years old or 10 years old, but I distinctly remember seeing the footage of that. And I've watched it now over and over again on YouTube a bunch of times, where you see a team collect their championship rings. Obviously we haven't seen the Mets do that now in 30 years, but that to me is a cool opening day memory that some Mets fans have. A lot of the younger generation, they're not around to see it, but at least you can go back on YouTube and watch. But I think that's one of the coolest things about opening day too, is watching whoever won the previous year. This year it'll be the Cubs. And even if you don't love the Cubs, you know, just seeing what their fans are going through when they see their team collect their rings and get to raise the flag.
I mean, this is a, you know, to put it on a downbeat, but last year was terrible. Having to have them stand there and watch the Royals get their rings and raise the pennant, raise the, you know, the World Championship banner, like that had to suck. That could not have been fun.
Right, when you lose to the team, yeah, the previous year in the World Series, and then you open with them the following season, I'm right. Totally with you. Oh, absolutely. That's the biggest rub in the face.
Yeah, I don't think that should be allowed, frankly. I think that when that happens, be like, let's try not to schedule these two against each other the first day. And on one hand, it was kind of like, oh, it'll be a fun rivalry. They'll open back up against each other. You know, turned out last year the Royals were inconsequential. But the idea that, like, you got to sit there and watch the people who beat you celebrate it, like, what is it?
And they dragged it out.
6 months later?
Yeah, if you remember, they dragged it out. I can't remember the specifics, but it was like they did the, you know, the championship flags and all that stuff and the trophy or whatever on the first day. Then they were off. Then they came back and it was the second game where they did the rings on field. It's like they really prolonged the pain, you know? Brutal.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's talk about opening day starters. The Mets have had a bunch of really wonderful ones. Dwight Gooden, Tom Seaver, David Cohn, Bartolo Colon, one of the best. Who do you think is the worst opening day starter the Mets have ever had?
I like Dylan G. I like the guy. I always enjoy watching him pitch. But I mean, you know, 2014 for me, because that's when I was, you know, I was writing Mets blog. They were in the middle of that rebuild. You know, and it's funny in the context of sort of where they were, right? They had Santana and Pedro and all those guys. Then, you know, after that, years later, we have Harvey and DeGrom and Syndergaard and all that stuff. But right in the middle there was John Neese and Dylan G. And it said everything you needed to know really about those two seasons. I think if you think about the fact that those guys were the starting pitchers, Dylan in particular, because John in 13 was, you know, people were still looking at him like a potential, you know, up and coming pitcher. But you know, to have Dylan G be your opening day starter at that point said a lot. And you know, we mentioned the record that the Mets had. They did lose that game. He let up, you know, a handful of runs. It wasn't the best start. Like, it just said so much to me about where we were, you know, at that point. And then it was Colon, I believe, the next season, and off we went.
For me...
Well, Dylan G, I looked this up. Dylan G has the worst career WAR of any opening day starter.
Yikes. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Now, yeah. It's still playing, though. So who knows? Could
get trying to hold on right now with the Rangers. Yeah.
Yeah. Still, I guess playing is a loose word for it, but
absolutely. We're all around the same age in our upper 30s, and I wasn't around for the 60s. So I don't know what Jack Fisher looked like on the mound or Roger Craig for that matter, or Al Jackson. In fact, I think at one point I owned an Al Jackson jersey because the Mets had like a, what are they call those sales where they're just basically emptying out everything from the bins at the end of spring training. And so I got some Al Jackson spring training jersey because he was probably wandering around as a coach 1 year. That's the most I know of Al Jackson. I never saw Pat Zachary pitch, though I know he was traded for Tom Seaver. So people in the 1981 Mets season that were there for opening day probably were not so happy to see Pat Zachary on the mound. For me, it's less about who was the worst opening day starter as compared to who was the most disappointing. Because I thought of all the Mets starters, especially over the last, let's say, 15, 20 years, outside of, you know, Dylan G and John Neese, those guys are just pretty much garbage, that we were going to get something good out of Mike Pelfrey. at some point, Mike Pelfrey was going to be at least a very good number two type pitcher. Maybe not a top of the rotation guy, but as far as the guys on the list the last 20 years, you know, Johan Santana was already an established ace. Tom Glavin was obviously a superstar during his time, not maybe when he was with the Mets, but he was still a very good pitcher with the Mets. Pedro Martinez, those kind of guys. But you thought that Pelfrey was, I don't know about the next coming, but somewhere in there, right, that he was going to be a good pitcher for the Mets for 10 years. And he winds up obviously fading away. And there was some news yesterday the Tigers are trying to sell him off. They'll just give him away basically for anything at this point in his career. But I thought when you saw Mike Pelfrey that he was going to be something big, and he obviously didn't turn out to be, but he was the opening day guy in 2011. And, you know, I'm a little disappointed in what they got from him ultimately.
Well, my take, so I looked into Al Jackson because I'm certainly too young to have seen him. He, you know, his career WAR 5.5, you know, not much higher than Dylan G's 5.1. And the weird thing about Al Jackson is he started in 64 and 65. So he started two opening days. But I'm gonna go with an out-of-the-box answer on this one. And I'm going to say Tom Seaver, and let me explain. In 1983, Tom Seaver was the opening day starter, coming off a 5-13 year with a 5.50 ERA with the Reds. Now, obviously, he's the opening day starter just because at that time he meant so much to Met fans, and they were so happy to see him back. But that's still a little crazy, the idea that someone puts up like a six spot and then gets the ball on opening day.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty – I didn't know that. That's – huh. I know some of those guys – it's funny. I wish I could go back and watch some of those, you know, some of those a little more closely, watch those games. I'd love to see just the pomp and circumstance of opening day. And, I mean, we know it from what we know and how it's covered and all that stuff. But I'd like to just sort of – go back in time and just sort of experience what opening day was like back then and kind of put it all in context. I think would be kind of cool. Cause like you mentioned opening day before, Robin, you were talking about the music. One of the things I always go back to, and this is really more spring training, but was like when WOR would begin their coverage with that, you know, the nine coming on the TV and you'd see the ballpark in the background and the drums and the music would pick up. And it was just this like momentum, you know, and all this hype. And yeah. So you're right. When a guy like Pelfrey goes out there and disappoints or does something, like it feels like such a letdown. And now we have Mets Twitter, which of course treats game one like the Super Bowl. And, you know, it's such a different experience. I would love to see what those games were like back then and how people just sort of went about opening day.
Well, that's the thing about
it. Total side note.
It's the most overreacted to day of the season. Because all fans, and it's not just Mets fans.
The first pitch is overreacted to.
Right. Oh, my God, did you see? He threw a curveball. What is he thinking? No, I think that, you know, you look back and you think, God, this team looks great on opening day. They're going to go for a run. I think almost all fans do. It's like a reactionary thing. You've been waiting for baseball for 5 months and you finally get it back and your team either performs extremely well or they lose on opening day and you say, we're great or we're not so great based on one game, and you forget, wait a second, it's a marathon. There's 161 left. Relax.
Well, total side note, the phrase pomp and circumstance, when I was a kid, I always thought that was pop in circus pants. And that's not something I've ever told a human being before.
Well, that's the title of the podcast right there, huh?
Yeah, pop in circus pants. It's about something completely different. So, you know, we talk about the idea of, you know, of opening day and people thinking more of it than it is, because the fact is that, you know, April doesn't mean any more than August. It's just a game is a game no matter at what point it comes in the year. Now, momentum is a real thing, and I do understand that, but, you know, the opening series, it could be argued, is more important, but opening day is one game. And if you look at 1986, the Mets lost opening day. One of their few opening day losses came in 86. So it is too much of a big deal to some people. But that said, we have all been looking forward to baseball throughout the offseason. The Mets fans for a couple weeks longer than we wanted to be looking forward to it. What are you looking forward to this year?
For me, I mean, you know, I think the Cespedes campaign here for MVP is really interesting. I like the fact that he's being vocal about putting the team on his shoulders. Like, I love Cespedes and, you know, everything about sort of his caricature and you know, what he brings to the team, I think is awesome. And so, like, you know, the bigger and better and bolder he is, the more fun it is. I mean, last year when they started with the Lion Guard, Lion King. I have two little girls who watch the new show. But the Lion Guard stuff, it's, you know, it's, I love it. And my daughter wants to go to the game just so she could bring her little, you know, Simba doll and hold it up and be a fan of Cespedes. So, like, the better and badder he is, the, you know, the better it is. That, and I'm also really interested to see Gazelleman and Lugo. I really liked what they did last year, and I like those kind of pitchers that sort of emerge, and given all the hype and all the, you know, the publicity and stuff that's going on around the other guys, the Fab Five and all that, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. I love the fact that these two guys just sort of snuck in here and, you know, are kind of grinding their way through and finding their spots. And so, like, I kind of root for them. I see them as, like, the underdog in the staff. And so I'm really looking forward to kind of watching how they progress.
I wanted to create t-shirts that said our number seven is better than your ace.
I'll buy it.
Yeah. And you can put the seven as the little, like, seven train logo. It'll look great. Rob, what are you looking forward to?
Yeah, there's a lot of things. I want to see Noah Syndergaard pitch like a Cy Young Award winner. I think he'll actually win it this year. It's one of my predictions, even though those things don't mean a whole lot, but I think he's going to be fantastic. So I want to see Syndergaard again. I want to see Zach Wheeler back. I was impressed at times with what I saw during spring training and heard of the velocity coming back, 96, 97. I was a big Zach Wheeler fan a couple of years ago before the injury, actually now 3 years ago before the injury. And I think he could be still a guy that fits right at the top end of a rotation. And the Mets have so many aces. Maybe he won't ever be the ace, but if he could be a nice number four, number five in this rotation, that's fantastic. So I want to see Zach Wheeler back again. I want to see what Jose Reyes we get this year. He is another year older. I watched him a lot during the World Baseball Classic in person covering that event, and I thought he brought some energy, but he didn't do a whole lot on the field. But I think he'll hit a little bit this year. I think he's going to play a ton. And, you know, people have talked about the over-under on David Wright this year. I don't know if David Wright will play a game this season. I hope he does. I hope he plays a lot of them, but pretty good chance we're going to see Jose Reyes quite a bit at third base yet again. So I want to see him. And yeah, like Matt said, how do you not want to see Cespedes every single day? The guy is awesome. He's fantastic at everything he does. He's fun to watch. He is the epitome of entertainment in baseball. You watch that guy and I am entertained. So all those things and more. I think this is a division winning type ball club. I think it could be a potential World Series type ball club. They're that good. So there's a lot of fun things around this team.
The thing I look forward to most is the idea of the rotation being healthy. If the potential upside that this pitching staff has is insane. The idea that they could truly trot out five potentially number one starters and then another two more that could be solid number twos it's unheard of. I can't think of a team that has that much depth if they're healthy. But the other thing I'm looking forward to, and this will lead us nicely into our predictions, is I look forward to Michael Conforto being the player that we thought he was. I think that he was humbled by last year. He worked very, very hard in the minors. He worked very, very hard this spring training. And I see him coming back. I don't see the 150 hitter. You know, I don't see the 350 hitter that he was at the beginning of last season. But I believe this is a guy that can hit 280, that can, you know, that can knock in 30 home runs. And I look forward to seeing him become that.
You're talking about for AAA Las Vegas, or are you talking about for the New York Mets?
That's the issue.
I'm talking about for the New York Mets. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people.
Where do you see him doing that? Where is he going to play?
You can't
hit from the bench. You know what I mean?
No, you can't. But I think that there's going to be a bit of a rotation. I think they are eventually going to trade. I hate to see him go, but I could see them trading Granderson at some point, which is unfortunate because then we'll lose the We Follow Lucas Duda Instagram account, which is one of the greatest pieces of comedy that's ever been created. And Grandy really is a favorite of mine and has been since he's been on the team. His personality is just so much fun, just so happy all the time. But I do think that a guy who is going to hit like he's going to hit, you don't sit him down, and I think they will find room for him.
I'm with you on Conforto. I mean, I don't know if I don't see him as a 30 home run guy, but like he's definitely.
I don't think he'll hit 30 this season.
Yeah, I mean
that's what he'll develop to.
To I don't know that I would personally, I don't know if I'd go that far, but I don't think he has to. Like, I don't think that's necessarily, you know, who he has to be. He's a number three hitter, clearly. And like, he's going to be a star. Mets fans are going to love him once he's playing every day and he's out there doing what he does. I think he'll be a star in the league, you know, once he catches on. But yeah, that's, well, it's funny. This section's about what we're looking forward to. And I think one of the things that we're all going to start to be watching probably from the minute the bell rings is continuing to keep an eye on the Jay Bruce stuff. And is he going to get traded, or is it Granderson? Lagares gets hurt. You know, this outfield, whatever it is on opening day, if Conforto's in the minors, you're right, he could still very easily play 140 games for the Mets and get 500 and some out of bats just because of injuries and who knows what with the way things go. And like, he's going to get a shot. And the key is, if he comes up, and this is where, like, I want to see him getting at bats against lefties in the minors. Cause like, if they call on him and he's in a groove, he may never let go. Whereas if they start him in the season right now, you know, he's going to be on the bench. He's going to be back and forth. It's, you know, you're jerking the kid around. Like, I'd rather just see him getting those at bats down there. So when they do need him, he never, you know, he's there for the next 15 years.
Well, that's the thing, is they need a spot. They have to create the spot. And I hate this idea that he is now going to be the backup center fielder again. It goes back to the construction of this team. It's something that I think I've complained about over time now, the last couple of years. I want him to have a dedicated spot, whether it be right field. It can't be left field because Cespedes isn't going to move from there. So it really has to be right field, unless you're going to teach him how to play his first base, which they didn't do at all during spring training. I don't get that. You had spring training to teach him first base. Why not at least get him some at-bats there? Duda has 1 year left on his deal, and you could let him go. And then Conforto slides in, becomes your everyday first baseman next year if you want that. Or if Duda's hurt this year, which is a definite possibility at some point, he seems to get hurt frequently and has a bad back anyway, why not get him at-bats at first base? I was a little disappointed that they didn't try to do that.
Well, let's go into predictions then, and let's talk about it, because my first bold prediction has to do with one of the things we're talking about. I think Jay Bruce actually comes back this year. I think that what we saw from Jay Bruce at the end of the season is going to be the Jay Bruce that we traded for. I think he comes out of it, and I think that Bruce, and this is a little bold, it's a little pushing it, but I think that Bruce hits 30 home runs with 100 RBI this year. And I think that even though Mets fans were probably rooting for keeping Grandy over Bruce, if you have to decide between the two of them, I think that Bruce ends up winning out.
Well, then you're not going to see Conforto at all. I mean, if you wanted to see Conforto, you just ruled him out if you think Jay Bruce is coming back to that type of player. Because if he's that kind of player, the Mets can't justify trading him at any point. So he's going to wind up playing. And if you're saying they're going to trade Granderson, then you're going to see Conforto as the everyday center fielder, and the Mets aren't going to do that. Not the trying only, to get to the playoffs.
The only way that the Mets can trade him is if he comes back. The reason they couldn't trade him over the offseason is because no one wanted to pay the salary that he commands. So I think coming out of it is what allows him to be traded.
And I hear you as far as the theory, but again, you're trying to be a World Series team this year. You're trying to win a World Series. So are you going to trade a guy at the deadline that's got 30 home runs, let's say, or 20 at the deadline? Let's say he's got 20 home runs and he's driven in 70 and he's batting 260. Are you going to trade him? I mean, I wouldn't, unless you had a major upgrade somewhere.
They tipped their hand in the offseason with the way they handled trying to trade Bruce, talking to so many teams about him, because, you know, even if Bruce hits 30 home runs, that's literally all he does. So,
by the way,
If Conforto can hit you 20, then you're going through all that just for 10 home runs. You'd rather have Conforto, who's the better all-around hitter. And Steve, you even, you know, so much has said it. So, like, they're just going to keep pushing Bruce. They'll figure this out at some point. Like, I don't know. The Bruce thing, I think, will just play itself out. I'd be shocked. I still can't believe he'll be on the team in the second half. But we'll, you know, we'll see what happens.
Can I throw this out there for you guys also? This is some breaking news on the podcast. It won't be breaking by the time people are listening to this, but Jerry's Familia just got suspended for 15 games. So it looks like he'll only get 15 as compared to the 30 that people were talking about as recently as maybe even a month ago.
Well, and then it's a good thing we have another closer. So Addison Reed will step up.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back to predictions. Speaking of trade deadlines, I think, you know, while the Mets are making a playoff push, they're going to be buyers at the deadline. And as, you know, as Rob was talking about already, with potential injuries to David Wright and to Lucas Duda, the player that I see them trading for, and I think he might be on the last year of his deal or the second to last year, so he makes sense, is Todd Frazier.
Yeah.
Plays first and third.
Yep. He's a good fit. You know, the Diamondbacks, the who are the teams? The White Sox, so Frazier, Robertson. You know, there's teams that are going to be, the Royals probably, that are going to be looking to dump guys, and the Mets match up pretty good with all of them. Frazier is awesome. That would be a nice little fit.
You mentioned it, Matt. The Royals. Yeah, the Royals are a real team to watch at the deadline, because if they're not in it, and I don't know what in it really is for them. I've thought about this a couple of times, where they have so many free agents, so many big time free agent players, Hosmer, Moustakas, Lorenzo Cain. Those guys are all loose after this year. They have to figure out what they're going to do, who they're going to re-sign, and with their budget being what it is, they're probably not going to be able to bring back everybody. And I don't think even more than maybe one or two of them. Lorenzo Cain, to me, if you can go out and get a real center fielder, and I know Lorenzo is getting a little bit older now, he's over 30, but if you can get him, and I don't know if he signs an extension with you, I doubt it. In fact, I'm pretty sure he's a Boris Klein, although I'm not positive about that. That'd be a guy even for the stretch run to play center field, and he moved Granderson back over to right, something like that. Yep. I don't know how they'll work it with all their outfielders.
But they were clearly, and they were, despite what anybody was saying publicly, they were clearly looking for a full-time center fielder last offseason. Rob, you and I talked about it endlessly, about how that's what they should have been doing. I mean, they were looking. I just don't think they were comfortable pulling the trigger on some of the players they'd have to give up. So, like, you know, it's fine. It's not like they needed it. They've got guys, right? So, like, they could cobble it together. But if a guy like Kane comes back to them and they have an opportunity for that, oh, that'd be great.
All right, let's do some roundtable predictions right now. How many wins?
Oh, good question. Where are you going, Matt?
I'll go 88 to 95. I'm going to nice seven game window there. But, because injuries, who the hell knows?
I'm going to go 93.
I'm going to go 102, but that includes the postseason.
Excellent. I dig it.
There you go. Congratulations.
my actual prediction is 91, or I guess 90 then, if I did the math right. Yeah, 90. How many
have winning the World Series?
You need 11, right? 91. Yeah, let's have them winning the World Series. Let's do that, right? That'll be fun. How can you not? Cool. Come on, we got to be. Yeah. Look, I try not to be too much of a homer, but at the same time, they look really good right now. And the upside, if everyone's healthy, they win the World Series. If they're not healthy, they finish in third. I mean,
there's a season to be that rosy, this is it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's go to another one then. Speaking of health, will we ever see Syndergaard, Harvey, DeGrom, Mats, and Wheeler in the rotation for more than three times through at the same time in 2017?
I don't know that we'll ever see. I don't know that we'll see them in the rotation 5 days in a row this year. Just if for no other reason, skipping starts, who's getting rest, it may not even be an injury, but the way they're going to tinker with the rotation, I don't think you'll ever even see that. But will they all be on the roster at the same time? Yeah, I'll go with that one. But consecutive starts, I think it's like a unicorn.
Yeah, I don't know what the plan is at this point as far as putting them all together. But yes, I would say they'll all pitch together in a 5 day span, probably three times. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think they'll do that. Sure.
Okay, I have faith right now, because it has not been shattered yet. Because this is the time of the year that you go, yeah, everything's going to work out great, even though it likely will not. But I believe in it. I think that there will be a stretch, probably, I'm going to go with a 2-month stretch where everybody's healthy, and that'll be a lot of fun to watch. All right, Amed Rosario makes his debut before or after the All-Star break.
I'll say after, because I think they've got coverage, in terms of guys that can play other positions. It's not, it's not like one injury brings up Rosario. I think a lot would have to go wrong.
Yeah, no way he sniffs the big leagues before September.
Yeah. I agree. I think we're all on the same page there. And one more, and we touched on it before. Where do they finish? What place in the division? What round of the playoffs? Where do you have them?
I think they're winning the division. The Nationals bullpen is going to kill them. I still think it's going to be a problem for them all year. I think the Mets win the division and bring on the Cubs.
I agree with Matt. I think they win the division as well. I have no doubt in their ability. And certainly you could say they just have to stay healthy with almost every ball club in the big league. So it's not just the Mets. A lot of things have to go right. There are a lot of ifs for every single team. And I think the Mets will win the division. Yeah.
Well, the difference is that the Mets, you know, everybody has to stay healthy, but the Mets are made of porcelain dolls, so it's much more difficult.
Yeah, that's true.
Good point. So are the Nationals now, the year before, though, you know?
Absolutely. I have them winning the division, and like I said, I've got to go with, if we have a year, it's this year. And so let's go with this year. I'm calling them to win the series right now. I'm calling them to win the series in six games. And with that,
nice.
We should put in some ding sound effects in post.
I know. There you go. Yeah.
That's it. That's the show. We're gonna be doing Meet the Mets cast every week throughout the season. So if you're a Mets fan and you wanna join in, make sure to subscribe. You can find us on the SNY.TV Mets podcast feed. You search for SNY Mets in the iPhone podcast app or whatever app you use to listen to your podcast. Obviously, you know how to find this one, so you should know how to find the others. But make sure to subscribe. Give us some great reviews on whatever podcast source you use so that other people know how to subscribe and, come and interact with us. I'm Steve Hofstetter. And for Rob Brender, I'm Matt Cerrone. I say thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.